Hi, and welcome to this presentation on Telephony and VoiceOver IP Fundamentals. I'm Steve Taylor, and I'm here today with Larry Hedick. This presentation is actually intended as an adjunct to be complementary to our technology backgrounder on Telephony and VoiceOver IP Fundamentals, which is available at the WebTorial site. We'd like to begin by thanking Nortel Networks for sponsoring this presentation. And when you have a chance, please check out the Nortel Networks offerings at www.nortelnetworks.com. The agenda for today, we're going to start with a discussion of the public switch telephone network, also known as the PSTN, both in terms of the architecture and also the fundamentals of digital voice. We're then going to look at what is voice over IP as compared with generic digital voice. We'll look at some of the issues involved in implementing voice over IP, and then a quick look at unified communications and applications convergence. So to start off with the PSTN architecture, we're going to turn the program over to Larry.
Thanks, Steve. Next, we'd like to discuss the Public Switch Telephone Network, or PSTN. Since any VoIP system needs to interwork with the PSTN, it's important to understand at a high level how the PSTN works. All of us are familiar with the PSTN quote-unquote user interface called the phone. Phones are connected over the local loop to the nearest central office. Central offices provide the phone with dial tone, ringtone, and where required, the CO converts analog voice waves created by speech into a digital format. Each central office is connected to other central offices by switches called a tandem switch. Note that the tandem office can reside side by side with the central office switch, or it can be at a distant location. Our diagram here shows the logical model. To control the call setup and call teardown between users, the PSTN uses an out-of-band packet-based system called Signaling System 7, or SS7. In North America, we use the SS7 network, while other countries may use a companion system called Common Channel SS7, or CCSS7. Working together with a local CO, SS7 also provides many user features like caller ID and call forwarding. The SS7 network also routes calls using the most efficient path, or when a link has failed, SS7 routes around the failure point. For the next discussion, I'll turn it back over to Steve.
Thanks, Larry. So with that introduction as to the architecture, let's talk about how digital voice gets prepared to go onto the digital network, because obviously voice starts off as being analog. Telephony is fundamentally an analog technology from the point of view that sound is analog, that is continuously variable, and doesn't naturally occur in ones and zeros, that is, in a digital form. So let's kind of look at how this process works. What we started off with is basically a look at a waveform. As it so happens, this is yours truly saying the two words, hi there. And what we'll do is first highlight just a portion of that part of the word hi, and let's zoom in a little. And when we're zoomed in, basically here we're just looking at a little more detail of that part of the word, still looking at the same portion of the word. And then we're zooming in a little more. You're starting to see here that we may even be able to break this down into discrete points. And in fact, if we go one step further, we're at a point that waveform we see can really be represented by basically connecting the dots along a particular function. So what happens in digital voice is that we take this basic waveform and then we essentially apply an axis to it, where the vertical axis is going to represent these various levels and the horizontal axis is time. In fact, at that point, we can then also put together a graph that says if we were to give you the height of each of these particular waveforms from the center line and then do them at a regular interval, we could very easily play connect the dots to reconstruct the waveform here. So let's talk about how this actually works in real voice, is that there are, is for industry standard PCM, lots of variations, but for industry standard PCM or pulse code modulation, each of these individual axes has 255 unique levels. So we have 255 levels that we match these dots to on the vertical axis, and then we sample it at regular intervals, and it turns out the regular sampling interval is 8,000 times per second. If we have 8,000 samples per second, we have 255 code levels, which says we can represent those with 8 bits per sample. We're taking 8,000 samples of 8 bits per sample, which gets us to 64,000 bits per second for sampling this particular waveform. This is the way that fundamental 64 kilobit per second pulse code modulation PCM has been done for years and years and years in the traditional public switch telephone network. In fact, the entire digital hierarchy is built on the 64 kilobits per second building blocks, sometimes called DS0s. So, when you hear about moving on up from there, you've probably heard of a DS1 or a T1. A T1 is a particular speed, 1.544 megabits per second, that happens to carry 24 DS0s. If you move on up from there, a T3 or DS3 carries 28 T1s in 45 megabits per second. And in fact, when we move into the SONET levels, called and SDH levels, what's called an OC1 carries 3 T3s in about 150 megabits per second. The key here is that these data speeds have been around for years and years and years, and our data speeds have been adapted when we think about a T1 or a T3 as being a digital service. They weren't designed that way because it was perfect for digital services and for computers. It was designed that way to make it fundamentally easy building blocks in the traditional digital hierarchy of the telephony network. Next up on the agenda, what's voice over IP? And for that part, we're going to go back to Larry.
Thanks, Steve. Since voice over IP runs over protocols originally designed to transport data, we'd like to highlight a few data network characteristics. Data networks work at multiple layers, and each layer uses a protocol that sets rules for that layer. For example, IP, which stands for Internet Protocol, sets rules for forwarding data at layer 3. The information contained in each layer is separated by frames. Each frame is put into successively larger frames by the next lower layer, much like the Russian Matryoshka dolls in our picture. Next, let's look at how these data protocols are adapted to voice. When voice is digitized in preparation for data network transport, it is put into a Layer 7 application frame. Layer 4 uses rules set by the User Datagram Protocol, or UDP, for setting a data session that will carry the voice embedded by the application layer. One important distinction between voice and data sessions: data applications typically use Transmission Control Protocol, or TCP, at Layer 4, whereas VoIP uses UDP. UDP is less complex than TCP, so it provides faster session control, thereby decreasing delay for the voice call. But unlike TCP, UDP does not provide error correction, so lost packets are not replaced with network request retransmissions. Maintaining the call's speech quality is therefore left to the voice application layer, other VoIP-specific techniques, and to some good old-fashioned network engineering. In general, digitized voice can be and is manipulated by the network. In the first instance, most voice packets are compressed via voice coder and then uncompressed on the other end by a decoder, so that bandwidth demands in the network are minimized. While traditional TDM voice doesn't have to be packetized in a legacy network, it often is packetized to create some network efficiencies. Voice over IP is always packetized. Finally, a technique called silence suppression is used. Since all conversations have certain periods of silence by at least one of the parties, it doesn't make much sense to transmit that silence across the network. By not transmitting silence, additional efficiencies are gained. Next up on the agenda, we'll take a look at how VoIP is implemented. We talked earlier in our presentation about the basic structure of the PSTN. Now we'd like to add in what happens when you integrate the PSTN with an IP network that carries voice. The first characteristic of a VoIP network, as opposed to a data-only IP network, is that in order to connect the PSTN to the VoIP network, it must contain gateways. One function of the gateway is to convert analog phone conversation into IP-friendly protocol and vice versa. Where IP phones are used, this gateway function isn't required on the IP side of the network. Another function of the gateway is to provide an interface and bidirectional protocol conversion between the IP network and the local PSTN central office. This function must provide both capabilities for the speech channel, or call information, and for the call control information needed by each respective network. In the long term, we believe that the current SS7 network that provides call control of the PSTN will be merged with or replaced by an IP-centric control network. In this environment, the protocol will control multiple sessions, including voice, video, non-real-time data like email, and specialized real-time data applications like instant messaging. Note that in this diagram, we have removed the designation SS7, and we simply call it the control network. Drilling down into some detail on each of these functions, let's next take a look at some typical VoIP network components. First is the family of hardware premise-based equipment. Included in this family is the gateway we talked about earlier. Note that the gateway function may be embedded into another device. Another popular choice to deploy VoIP is to enable the existing data network router. A third hardware alternative relies on an IP-enabled PBX or a pure IP PBX. Note that an IP-enabled PBX is typically provided by traditional PBX vendors like Nortel, but with an IP capability added to it. The IP-enabled PBX tends to be feature-rich. The pure IP PBX is purpose-built using IP as the base and more likely offered by a new entrant into the PBX market. The IP PBX will also be deployed on a server instead of traditional PBX hardware. The feature richness of an IP PBX will depend on each individual vendor. In addition to premise-based alternatives, the enterprise can also deploy IP Centrex. Like traditional Centrex, IP Centrex is supplied as a service. It can also be called sometimes a hosted IP telephony service. Just like our example with premise-based VoIP, IP-centric switches may be physically located in a nearby central office, or the switching hardware can reside thousands of miles away. Because of this geographical flexibility, we have suggested that carriers rename their IP-centric service to be called IP Distributex. So far, carriers haven't taken our advice, so I guess we'll just have to stick to technology backgrounders and stay away from naming carriers. For those concerned about quality of service, users must understand that most major long-distance carriers now use substantial amounts of IP-based transport for traditional PSTN calls, all with no noticeable difference in call quality. Their tandem office replacement proves that, when properly engineered, voice over IP quality of service can be managed. Now I'll turn it back to Steve to wrap up our discussion.
Thanks, Larry. Okay, so we've just heard a description of lots of different pieces of technology that can be put together into voice over IP networks. What I have here is basically a schematic diagram or a network architecture that to me represents what could be considered voice over IP. And as you can see from this, there's both the good news and the bad news. The good news is we have an architecture that can be considered a voice over IP architecture. The bad news is this is the simplest version of it that we could come up with. Because voice over IP means many different things to different people. It could be something as simple as, if you look on the far left side, starting with a traditional phone that goes into the PSTN that we've been talking about, and then simply goes into the Internet Telephony Service Provider, the ITSP for long distance transport, goes back out of the PSTN to another traditional phone. To some folks, that's voice over IP. It could be IP phones going into IP Centrex. It could be IP phones going into an IP PBX or an IP-enabled PBX and then being transported across the Internet or across a private IP network. It could also be a traditional phone connected into a traditional PBX into a voice over IP router, which in that case would in all probability be used primarily just for toll bypass. But the key is that this can be any part of this. So voice over IP is a very, very, very large undertaking. So we have these various parts here, any of which could be considered quite legitimately to be voice over IP. It also brings up another key point. Voice over IP doesn't have to include all of these. It may be that you don't want to include the Internet as a part of your voice over IP implementation, or you might want to. That's your choice. It also means that what you have here is the capability for taking all of these pieces and doing it one piece at a time. You may start primarily with the premise, move to the wide area. You may start primarily with the wide area, move to the premise. Lots and lots of options. Both the beauty and sometimes the frustration of voice over IP. So, last point on our agenda, unified communications and applications convergence. Just a moment ago, we were talking about this as being the architecture, that's the fundamental architecture for voice over IP. That's the good news. But remember, voice over IP is in many ways just the transport layer and just the enabling catalyst that lets you move forward to actually redefine your business processes. Because what we really see happening is this next slide, which is overlaying information processing and storage as part of the entire converged IP network. Yes, there are good reasons to do voice over IP simply for voice, but the real power for voice over IP is going to come from converged applications. It's going to come from fundamentally redefining how you do business by having there be no difference between voice communications and data communications. By having your web contact center, your web-based contact center, be an integral part of your call center. By having all of these various processes that you do today converged into a single application infrastructure. So in reality, what we see happening here is not that voice over IP is an end in of itself, but voice over IP is simply the tip of the proverbial iceberg that lets you redefine how you do business better in the 21st century. So, thank you very much for spending this time with us. We think we've done a decent job of giving you an overview of the architecture, talking some about what voice over IP is all about, talking about implementing voice over IP, and then taking just a very quick look at unified communications and applications convergence, and we will be bringing you more information on that. In the meantime, if you would like to have more information, please continue to visit WebTorials and also to visit NorCal Networks. Thanks again.